ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Hey, welcome to this episode of the Hagmann Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network, YouTube Live, as well as Blog Talk Radio. I want to just welcome everyone into our broadcast tonight. We get busy news day, of course. A number of things to get into tonight, but this is the day before that the Halloween, you know. And there's a lot of occult significance to today. There's a lot of just today and tomorrow. People just don't really understand what's going on. Now, on top of that, of course, we're going to be getting into some pretty interesting topics there, but coming out of the gate here. Of course, the Mueller indictments. The Mueller indictments today. That's right. Paul Manafort and Rick Gates. Not unexpected, considering what we saw over the weekend with the reactions by certain people on Twitter. My concern is who leaked, and consider the fact that the news really to me shouldn't be right now is the fact that that Manafort was indicted. The news to me should be who leaked that. You're talking about a secret of a grand jury panel. You got three places where it could have come from: Mueller's team, the grand jury itself, both of which would be federal violations, or the defendant. And I can't, for the life, I don't believe the defendant spoke, either Gates or Manafort. So that leaves, especially to CNN, leaking that up to CNN. There you have it. That's the story. No one's paying attention to that part of the story. Now, coming out of the gate show, we're going to have Peter Chalka with us because he's got, we're looking at the media right now is certainly not Donald Trump's friend, except for
not at all.
However, Fox News is making some changes. Peter Chalka called it. He nailed it. He called it. As a matter of fact, he's got some. He should take a victory lap when he comes on air. I hope he does. But he's going to be joining us momentarily. Just let us know when he's on.
He's ready.
Okay. Someone I am honored to call my friend. Someone who I believe is one of the foremost researchers, especially with respect to media today, Peter Barry Chalka, writing for Hagmann Report, writing for American Thinker, just an all-around fantastic researcher. Peter, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Doug. It's great to be with you again.
I know you're not at home. You're on the road. So I thank you for not only your gift of time, but also the inconvenience. I know this is going to be inconvenience for you. All that said. Big day in the media, and you've been nailing these media stories left and right, 100% accurate with accuracy. What's significant about today, Peter? That we should be paying attention to.
Well, in addition to the incredible news breaking today about the indictments handed down by the grand jury in Washington D.C., it's really a big day in the history and in the future of the Fox News channel. I would argue possibly their biggest day in a schedule change since they first went on the air 21 years ago this month. Later tonight, they are solidifying their brand new primetime schedule, primetime being the hours of between 8 and 11 p.m. Eastern. And Tucker Carlson will continue to be on at 8, Sean Hannity at 9, and Hannity moved to that time slot 5 weeks ago to directly challenge Rachel Maddow, and that was the first part of this new schedule change, but completing it tonight at 10 o'clock will be the premiere of Laura Ingraham's new program, The Ingraham Angle, and then following her at 11 p.m. is a brand new live hour of news, 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, hosted by Shannon Bream. And Shannon Bream is an attorney and the former Supreme Court reporter for Fox News, as well as an anchor part-time anchor or substitute anchor, and now she has her own show. So this new schedule from 8 p.m. to midnight is, I think, a powerhouse in terms of fair and balanced with a conservative tilt media in the mainstream media. And in addition, tonight marks the beginning of Fox News's broadcasting 20 hours a day, Monday through Friday, live. They will no longer have as many replays. Prior to this change tonight, they were having 8 hours a day of recorded replays, but now they're going to be live right through 12 midnight Eastern time, at which time they'll start 4 hours of replays. But that will bring them really head-to-head with CNN and MSNBC, both of which also broadcast live until 12 midnight. And you're at a ratings advantage when you're broadcasting live, because a replay usually doesn't get as many viewers as a live program. So Fox is pulling together its schedule after the previous 15 months of chaos and problems, which followed allegations of sexual harassment, which we've covered on many previous broadcasts and I've reported on in many of my articles. The elimination of Roger Ailes and some other top executives, and the talent leaving Fox News, and they've really been in a bad place. But since the first salvo in this new schedule began 5 weeks ago, it's been looking really good. Sean Hannity, for example, moving from 10 o'clock to 9 p.m., has started winning that time slot again for Fox News against Rachel Maddow. She had actually moved into the lead, incredibly, starting in May when all of the chaos at Fox began. But it looks like a brighter outcome. And it should be mentioned that why do we pay so much attention to what's happening with Fox News, as we have been doing?
Exactly. I'm sure many people out there are asking, well, what does it matter, Peter? Why? And please do tell us, because this, I love this about you, and I love this about why we should pay attention and people listen to this. Go ahead, Peter.
There are a number of reasons, and I know you appreciate it as well, Doug, because you're often talking about and crediting Fox News for the really fine work that they're doing, which is not to say that the channel is perfect. They have a lot of left-wing folks on there during the day and even in prime time. But that's part of their fair and balanced legacy. And no other mainstream channel in the United States, a news channel or otherwise, has its prime time dominated by folks who are conservative. Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, and Shannon Bream, who's not an out-front conservative, but she's a very, very capable, fair anchor. This is a real strong lineup for a mainstream media source. And as Sean Hannity often says, and he's been saying it for several years now, mainstream journalism is effectively dead in this country, with the exception of Fox News. So Fox News stands alone there, and it's not only that they present conservative points of view. I mean, you and I and many of our audience know that really to get into these issues, to understand them, to probe, to get to the real deep politics of these stories, you've got to read, especially online, alternative sources. So we understand that. But still, for many folks, it's the mainstream media that's the place they go to first. And not only that, in recent months, Sean Hannity, and I know you've reported this, I've reported this extensively, Sean Hannity on his program has been breaking news, not only from what he's been reporting, but he invites guests on, Sarah Carter of Circle News,
yep.
His colleague Greg Jarrett, the attorney, a whole range of people, Jay Sekulow. These and other people have been doing the real journalism that's left in this country, and Sean Hannity has brought them to the fore. So he is doing coverage that I wind up quoting in my articles and then following up on. So he's to be given enormous credit. Some people are still stuck at looking at the Sean Hannity of the past when he was on with Alan Combs, a show that ended in January of 2009, and then Sean went out on his own. But he has grown with the times, and is really, in my opinion, doing exceptional work. So, yes, Fox News is not the be-all, end-all. They still have people on there like Juan Williams, and they seem to be bringing the Obama administration person, Marie Harf, into a more prominent role. And those things disturb me and concern me, but I wait for prime time, and even if they have left-wingers on there, they usually do themselves in, because Hannity, Carlson, Laura Ingraham, they've got the facts, and they're not afraid to speak their minds. So,
I got a prediction for you, Peter. Between now and I'll give you 6 months. My thinking is 3, but 6 months you're going to be on there with Sean Hannity. That's just my thought. But as a guest, and folks listening, watching, you watch, man, it's going to happen. Go on, sir. Sorry.
Well, I just want to review briefly how we even got to this part of our reporting, because, yes, I've broken a lot of these stories, and the recent high point, which we'll talk about before the half hour is over. But my colleagues in this have been you, Joe, and your entire crew there, John, Eric, Jackie, and the Hagman Report, and also American thinker Thomas Lifson. It was back on May 19th. That American Thinker, which I had written before, published my first long article on the cable news wars and Fox News in particular. And the day before, Roger Ailes, the original CEO and co-founder of Fox News, had passed away. So the timing was strange and ironic in a way. But that first article of mine, which pointed out the problems with Fox News and outlined the cable news wars, a surprise to me, went incredibly viral. It was picked up early on by Real Clear Politics, a very highly trafficked, mainstream, credible site. And over the next 7 days, my article was linked at the homepage of Real Clear Politics in as many as 3 places simultaneously. And it fell into a column as one of the 3 most read articles of that week. I was sharing that designation with Alan Dershowitz and another really famous writer. So I was scratching my head wondering how that even happened, but it was meant to be, and it got things off to a really strong start. So I stayed with that beat of the media, the cable wars, Fox News, as events were unfolding throughout the summer and right now into the fall. You know, as the media is intersecting with the resistance movement, so-called. I mean, virtually all other mainstream media, whether electronic or print now, is part of what was being called the resistance to the Trump presidency. They are out there to get Trump, and the studies at Harvard and elsewhere are proving this point with the completely lopsided negative coverage of the Trump administration by every mainstream media, with the exception of Fox News, which is running close to 50-50 pro and con the Trump administration. So it's really the last vestige of anything passing for real journalism, that is Fox News. But as the spring and summer went on, I continued to report on the media, the cable wars, and I think I've done over 40 articles on that subject now. I've written about other things, of course, too, but for both American Thinker and the Hagman Report. And I remember the day, June 6th, actually get emotional when I think about it. June 6th, when we did our first show, and really, it was a really fabulous moment.
It was.
Hooking up with you guys. So,
you're the man.
You know, you're a major part of the picture of what we're trying to do.
Well, Peter, look, you know, folks, we live this every day. Peter lives this every day. You know, the resistance angle that we're talking about here, the fight, it's not just a 9-to-5 fight. It's not just a one article fight. It's a constant fight. And I feel your heart there, my man. I really do. And you've got a big heart and a lot of emotion, and deservedly so.
And I was telling you off air before we started that I just came in from the second day of visiting the Living Museum of the aircraft carrier, the USS Midway, which is docked here in San Diego. And really, this is almost a life-changing event to visit this aircraft carrier, which was in service from right after World War II, starting in September of 1946, until after the Gulf War that ended in 1991, actually, and it was decommissioned in 92. And words can't describe what the experience is like visiting this aircraft carrier and seeing for yourself the conditions that the crew lived in and worked in, the absolute incredible nature of what they had to give up to live on this ship when it was deployed for months at a time. And we visited every part of the ship, the bridge where the captain sat in the captain's chair, the crew's quarters, the officer's quarters, these incredible stations where the flights were managed. There's a central part of the ship which has just been recently opened up, which was kind of the electronic brain of the ship with computers from the 70s and 80s. It's all still as it was on its last deployment. And I came away, of course, with a feeling that this was when America was at its apex, the American century, the middle of the 20th century until the end of the 20th century. And it just gives you such a feeling for the commitment, the bravery, the heroism, and the intelligence of the men, I think it was mostly men at that point on the ship, who designed it, built it, and then sailed it and flew off of its deck into combat during the Vietnam War. But at every other period, it's living history. They were in the Korean War, the Cold War. They served to pick up astronauts who were coming back from space. They evacuated people from Saigon from the helicopters in 1975. And finally, they deployed during the Gulf War of 1991. So it just, again, words can't describe it. But you know, I think what we're about, what I thought of when I'm walking along this ship on the flight deck is, what are we here for? We're here to help make America great again, right? And that's what this ship is all about. This ship is a living instance of when America was great, and I hope we can get back there because we've got a lot of history behind us that should be propelling us into greatness once again.
You know, and I'll tell you something. It's I can feel that emotion kind of going through you, and I can only imagine as you walk down those all the history, the halls of history. It's just, and you're right, it's that sentiment that American exceptionalism, it's what made us great, and we need that greatness back, because for 8 years we've been just being told, we were told that we were the, basically, you know, the scrapings of a shoe, and it was an 8-year apology tour across the world, and it's now it's time to regain that strong feeling. But Peter, I have to compliment you, and I don't know how many people out there, listeners and viewers out there, know this. Well, I'll just come around and say it, and we can go back and kind of dissect it. But the President of the United States actually recognized Peter Baryshnikov's work. That's right, President Donald Trump recognized Peter Baryshnikov's work, and through Sean Hannity. And I just want to say congratulations, because you deserve it. You want to tell people about that? Because I think that's kind of exciting.
Thank you, Doug. And yes, he recognized my work that was published at the Hagman Report. It was Sean Hannity who encouraged me to finally dip my toe into social media, which I'd been reluctant to do, and to sign up for a Twitter account, which I did at his recommendation 2 months ago. And he said, you know, I'll retweet you, Peter, that'll help. And he's been true to his word. When I write my articles, I put tweet a link to it at Twitter, both American Thinker articles and the Hagman version of the articles. And Sean has retweeted about 5 of my articles for both American Thinker and the Hagman Report, and they've gotten pretty good number of page views as a result, and have pumped up my Twitter followers. And then last Wednesday evening, here on the road, I wrote a very quick article reporting on how Sean Hannity, and in particular, and Fox News, is doing very, very well in the ratings now. And this was this needed to be said in the midweek last, because some dirt had been thrown at Fox News again with the New York Times' latest hit piece on Bill O'Reilly, who's been gone from Fox News for over 6 months now. But I felt that that was interesting timing, that the mainstream was trying to drag down Fox News again on the verge of its launch of its new schedule tonight. So I wrote a very quick article and put it up at both, well, I submitted it to American Thinker, where it went online, and I put it up at the Hagman Report, actually a slightly different article at the Hagman Report with a different title and a different graphic. And I tweeted both of them, and I emailed the tweets to Sean Hannity. And on this occasion, he retweeted my tweet pointing to the Hagman article. And that really started to, the timing was right even before anybody else got a hold of it, anybody else in a high place. And I saw the page views, the likes, my followers, and the retweets going really, really high, much higher than any of the earlier retweets from Sean. And then on Thursday evening, I discovered that guess who else had retweeted it but President Donald J. Trump.
It's just so
absolutely
amazing.
Mind-boggling.
You know,
I mean, I kept pinching myself and checking, rechecking, am I really on the real Donald Trump's Twitter? And there it was. There it was, retweeted. And yes, he follows Sean Hannity. They make no secret that they're friends, and they follow each other's work. And this shows that the President of the United States, who does his own tweeting, or else instructs his aide what to tweet, is in charge of his Twitter. So he either read the article, possibly it's a short article, or he certainly saw it and retweeted it. And I mean, you know, this is like a dream come true. I mean, really, no matter who's the president, even if Barack Obama had retweeted an article of mine, I would have been happy on some level when somebody at that level recognizes your work. But I mean, in this case, it's the icing on the cake. So, but, you know, credit is also needs to be paid to the Hagman Report in this case, because you have provided the outlet and the venue for this work to reach an audience, and American Thinker as well, although in this occasion the Hagman Report won out in the retweet. And I couldn't be happier about that, because, you know, part of my agenda and mission now, working so closely with you guys for the last 4 or 5 months, is to work together so that we advance the cause together. And as we all hopefully rise in public awareness and outreach and an audience, it's not only the better for all of us, but for the country at large. You know, I really believe that.
Oh,
and
I do too.
It's that kind of collaborative undertaking that's, you know, that's so essential, and it's so rare. I mean, I have to say that in this world, with everybody supposedly networked and connected and on social media, it is not that easy to find colleagues who are smart, principled, sincere, dedicated, and willing to share credit and help, you know, others advance. And that, you know, that's the bottom line of the Hagman Report as I knew it as a listener, even before we became closely involved in June.
And I have to say this, it's you bring a lot of class to this joint, okay? But honestly, you bring a lot of character and a lot of class. Your care, your concern for the state of our nation, and your investigative reporting abilities is second to none, in my view. You really have a lot of insight. And, you know, when people ask, this is so important, because we're fighting a leviathan of lies. How's that? A leviathan of lies. And you're on the front line. You really are. And you're really, you're holding the media to account, and you're holding others to account, and you're bringing out what really needs to be brought out, and no one else is doing it like you do it. So I, for that, we thank you. And, man, everyone should, studio, let's have a studio applause, right? Okay, no, we have no studio audience, but if we did, they'd be applauding, for sure.
Maybe you can get Lady to bark.
Yeah, she's at my feet as usual.
Doug, right back at you, because it's this collaborative environment that we're working in, which really makes it all possible. I mean, I could be out here, ranting to the moon, but no, I'm on the Hagman Report with all of your audience. I'm at American Thinker, and you know, in the last few months, because of this outreach, I've been published at InfoWars on one prominent occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Buchanan's website highlighted one of my articles on its front page, and it's still archived there. Real Clear Politics picked up an article. So, you know, none of that would have been possible without the venue of American Thinker.
Amen.
And now rising quickly in the firmament, the Hagman Report, with all that you do. So
this is why we got to stick together, brother.
This is where it's at.
That's right. This is why we got to stick together, and this is why your star is rising quickly as well. Peter, thank you so very much again for your gift of time. I know you're on the road. God bless you and yours, and thank you so much for sharing what you did tonight. Man, until next time, my friend, travel safe, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you, Doug. God bless.
Thanks, brother. Peter Barry Chalka. Follow Peter on Twitter, at Pete Chalka. Okay, you've got to do that. Follow him on Twitter. If you don't have a Twitter account, open one. Follow him. Get the word before everyone else gets it. That's Peter Barry Chalka. We're going to break back after network break. Stay right where you're at.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced. Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Parada's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is just a news-heavy day, of course. Woke up this morning. Well, not woke up this morning. If you woke up at 4, like some of us do, you know, Eastern time, well, you had to wait a few hours to really be confirmed the fact that Paul Manafort and Rick Gates, his deputy assistant, were indicted by the Mueller grand jury. How that happened? Well, we can spend the whole show. In fact, gee whiz, I think I might have today at 9 o'clock. Actually, it was kind of funny because the news overlapped. I wasn't watching, and nonetheless, so I predicted the Manafort and Gates indictment after it happened. I mean, just minutes after it happened. So, nonetheless, you know, hey, things happen. But that's on the Doug Hagmann radio show. That's my show, 9 to 10 Eastern. Joe and John, they've got a show 2 to 3, as if you can't get enough of Hagmann, right? And then 7 to 8 is our flagship show, and we're having our next guest. The only thing I got to say about our next guest is if you're having dinner and you're eating a pork chop, put that pork chop down. All right, put it down, put the bacon down. Yeah, BLT, you want that, right? Yeah, well, you're going to find out why in a moment. But again, a news-heavy day. And this, I'm going to thank as well Peter Berichowka, because he has done such a phenomenal job. That man works 24/7. And if you don't think what he's talking about is important, think again, because really, just as the United States is the last speed bump before this globalist takeover, so too is Fox News and the captured corporate mass media, and not the entirety of Fox News, but there's a thin line. There's like this standoff. I want to be careful with my words. There's this situation with Fox News where you've got Shepard Smith on one side, and then you know, you've got Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and others like contributors like Judge Napolitano on the other side, constitutionalists and people who really care about the country. And I know I'm going to get emails from just saying what I just said. But look, Peter Berichowka, the real deal. Help him, support him, follow him. Follow him on Twitter, Pete Chowka. And again, my thanks go out to him as well. Before we get to our next guest, as I said, portion of the nice broadcast brought to you by ZipRecruiter.com. Let me ask you, are you in need of great talent for your business, but are you short on time? You don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. You need just the right tools. You need the smarter tools, really. And what if I told you hiring could be made easier, more streamlined, less time consuming? Are you paying attention yet? You should be. So even when you're busy, you can still be smart about the way you hire. Well, I've got something for you. ZipRecruiter.com. You see, with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click, so you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidate. Then ZipRecruiter puts smart matching technology to work, actively notifying quality candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches right away. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. And unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. You can even get a head start on the interview process by adding screening questions to your job post to help identify the most qualified candidates, so you don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes to find the perfect fit. Let me tell you, that was my problem before, and we've used ZipRecruiter with great success. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. That's right. Listen to that. 80% employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And the easy-to-use ZipRecruiter dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish, all in one place. If I can do it, you can do it. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Now, here's what you need to do. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with right now, immediate results. Right now, listeners to the Hagmann Report, if you are hiring, if you own a small, medium, large business, it doesn't matter. Our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Hagmann. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Hagmann. One more time to try it for free. You're not going to find this anywhere else of this nature. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Hagmann. You're going to thank me later. You really will. ZipRecruiter.com/Hagmann. What a great way to find the best candidate for the job, your job. Now, we've had, again, the heavy news day. But let's take a little side venture here. You know, we had Honeybee. Joe, we had Honeybee in the studio last week.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about some really ugly stuff. There's so much ugly stuff going on out there. Look, Pizzagate's real. Pettigate's real. I don't care. Go ahead and censor us for saying that. If you believe that that's just nothing more than some artistic leanings of some eccentric individuals, then you know what? I can't help you. You're beyond help. Our next guest is going to be talking about a situation. In fact, if you haven't heard of it, you're going to need to hear about this. His name is David Hawkins. We're very fortunate to have him. He's a Cambridge-educated, in fact, he's graduated first-class honors degree in mechanical engineering from Cambridge University. Yeah, that's me, too. I can do that, right? No, I don't think so. He's a forensic economist at Hawks Cafe, Vancouver, British Columbia. He is a co-founder of abledanger.org or associate of Field McConnell. He came to us via Field McConnell. And he's a forensic economist. His focus really is on forensic economics, for disaster analysis and virtual reality prototyping. Just something that I do on that. It's my hobby. Yeah, right. You think this guy's got it together? Absolutely, he does. He offers keynote speeches, workshops or consultancy on the number of different projects. But having said all that, welcome David Hawkins to the program. Mr. Hawkins, thanks for joining us today.
Well, hello, Douglas, and hello, Joe. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Oh, well,
thanks for coming
on. Yeah, man.
And, David, we got your audio. It sounds great, but we need you to turn on the video camera. We don't have you on video.
So we can see your shining face.
Yes, well, I'm trying to, and there's a little camera with a bar across it. I'm clicking on that, and I'm trying to accept it, but it won't accept my acceptance.
Well, no. Now,
so some
techie
can tell me what I'm not doing right.
Let's see. Sometimes it takes a minute or so, like 30 seconds when you click on that. It should be automatic, but I just went through this last week with mine. I'm not sure. But in the meantime, we'll work through it.
Okay.
All right. Well, Mr. Hawkins, it's a pleasure to have you with us. We asked you, I know John asked you to come on because you were front and center in a specific case. Oh, man, how many people have heard of the Robert Picton case? Raise your hands. And I can't see anyway, so. Can we start out there? We're talking about the Robert Picton case.
Yes, certainly. It's an amazing story. This is a federally registered society called Piggy Palace Good Time Society. When I say federally registered, it must have been done with the knowledge and consent of senior people in Ottawa. And what they were licensed to do was to have sports and entertainment events. And they ran these sports and entertainment events, I believe, theoretically to raise money to help women off the streets in the downtown East Side, which is the poorest postcode in Canada. Unfortunately for the poor women in the downtown East Side, it would appear that upwards of 60 to 100 of these women were abducted over a period from 1996 to 2002 and taken out to the pig farm for what they described as raves, R-A-V-E-S. And essentially there would be audiences phone or bust in from all over North America of up to 1,800 to 2,000. And just to give you a flavor, and I'm sorry if this is bad news, but I know a woman who knew her brother had gone out to the pig farm where these women were murdered, and a number of them were actually eaten in cannibal feasts. And the woman told me that her brother had said to her he would rather die or commit suicide than appear in a court as a witness to what he saw at the pig farm. So that gives you a flavor of the enormity of this crime, and it's been buried by multiple jurisdictions, if you will. And I said to myself when I heard about it, and I heard pretty early in the 90s, that those women deserve justice, because whether they're prostitutes and First Nations people, they have as much a right to live as the wealthiest debutante in the Vancouver area.
Amen. Amen. And that's what this is all about. And just to give people kind of a wide-angle view, it was from 78, roughly 1978 to 2001, there was at least 65 women who disappeared from the downtown East Side District of Vancouver, as Mr. Hawkins had stated, Vancouver, British Columbia, that is, in promoting or prompting one of the prompting the largest serial killer investigation in Canadian history. This is kind of Criminal Minds stuff, if you will. And yeah, Robert Picton was charged, by the way, with murdering 26 of the women, convicted on 6 charges, and in a jail cell conversation with an undercover police officer, if you can believe this, Picton claimed to have murdered 49 women, and in fact, he was sad. He kind of kicked himself in the butt for not hitting the 50 mark, and it's just repulsive. But see, this stuff goes on out there. So, people might say, well, why talk about this? Well, there's a lot to learn from this, and you know, you're right. One thing that you said, as investigators, it doesn't matter if a prostitute is killed or one of the highest society, a person. It doesn't matter. It's a person, someone's daughter, someone's son, someone's brother, mother, sister, wife, aunt, uncle. It doesn't matter. It's a human being. And so you're absolutely right in this. So, yes, great overview, by the way. Thank you. Now, I don't even know how to start this off because this is so heinous. How did you get involved in this? I mean...
I suppose with my background, when I left Cambridge, I joined a French exploration company and traveled around the world, and they were very kind to give me some interesting, challenging work, and I became a troubleshooter and also helped put out oil fires on wells. I learned how to handle explosives, and my last job with them was I was coordinator of artificial intelligence and geoscience research in Richfield in Connecticut. So, you know, I traveled the world not in the interests of solving crimes, but solving management problems or technical problems. And I found from my experience that when you have an issue, let's say a problem that appears to be a management, it's much more frequently a problem of people not doing what they should do rather than doing what they shouldn't do. Anyway, cut a long story short, when I arrived in British Columbia in 92, I smelt probably the most corrupt jurisdiction in the province of British Columbia and the country of Canada of anywhere I've worked. And I've worked in some pretty tough spots, including Nigeria and Indonesia, that perhaps at first blush people might say, well, they're pretty corrupt. But the kind of corruption I encountered, for example, in Nigeria, was you might arrive at a roadblock because someone thinks you're driving on the wrong side of the road, and really all they want is a bit of money to let you through. But here, and I think this is true of many of these supposedly civilized countries like Canada and the United States and Australia, New Zealand, United Kingdom, is you don't see a physical roadblock. You actually run into a virtual roadblock. And there are people who are running the roadblock, who are watching you very carefully, who know a great deal about you, and they don't necessarily want money. They want control. And many people run into these roadblocks, and they might be killed, and quite often their deaths are considered to be collateral. So, short answer to your question is, I believe British Columbia and Canada is the most corrupt, are the most corrupt senior jurisdictions in the world. Over to you.
So you have a case here where nobody's willing to acknowledge that there was a serial killer working, and then you have, as you said, one of the most corrupt jurisdictions, local police jurisdictions that there is. And so I guess
that's a recipe for good stuff, right?
Perfect recipe for this to take place. And so women started disappearing in the east side of Vancouver, and from what I understand, this is an area where you have lots of crime and drug dealers and whatnot. And even the prostitutes started to take measures to try to narrow down what was happening to these people by, from what I'm reading, they were taking the license plates of where other girls, in cars other girls got into, and they were walking around in groups. But you have this predator taking prostitutes, and they are disappearing. So what happens that gets this this case in the news?
Well, obviously the scale, the serial killing, the manner of the killing. For example, they found fridges full of body parts, including a skull split down the middle, probably with a chainsaw. And you have between 1,800 and 2,000 people showing up. There was a regular gig a music group called Dead on Arrival. One of their principal claims to fame is a song called Last Scream of the Missing Neighbors. So you've got a monumental crime going on under the umbrella or jurisdiction of the federal government of Canada. It is after a federal registered society. There were, I believe, six trustees of this society, and I've often in our conversations with Phil McConnell and so on been telling people, with a crime on this scale, you don't go for murder one, because there's too many very, very frightened people involved. They're not going to tell you anything. With this kind of problem or crime, you need to go for wrongful death. So, for example, when those women went to perform in the shows with the music from Dead on Arrival, they were under a duty of care of the trustees of that society. So what should have happened, in my opinion, is the trustees, and I know the names of three, the siblings, the Picton siblings, but there were three others whose names I haven't been able to find. They should have been sued for wrongful death and damages. And it's a bit like the OJ situation. They couldn't prove murder one because the glove didn't fit. Well, this clown, he'd obviously tightened up his hand so it wouldn't fit into the glove, which was wet or something. So I think his lawyer said, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. So the family of Nicole Simpson's boyfriend went after him for wrongful death, and they won. Now, my point is, whether or not he paid up, I think it was a $30 million fee, the important thing is you get discovery, and it's a lower burden of proof. And with all of these incidents where we, you know, claim it's terrorism or whatever, it's much better to go after people who have a duty of care for the victims and get discovery, and don't go through the criminal courts, go through the civil courts. Over to you.
Okay, and that's an interesting point, because, and I'm going to toss it to Joe here in a second, what you bring up, because just to kind of go back a little bit, low priority victims, if there is such a thing, but that's, you know, kind of what you're referencing. Then you've got the actual court process, the criminal court process, which is corrupt anyway at varying levels or all levels. And then you've got, the key here is the civil aspect to this, which leads to discovery, which leads to more of the truth than not. Okay, I'm getting that. And by the way, folks, our guest is David Hawkins, abledanger.org, talking in this conversation about the Picton, P-I-C-K-T-O-N case. Very interesting. Again, this gentleman's Cambridge educated and extremely well versed in this matter as well as other matters, but and how this overlaps into today. Go ahead, Joe, because I know you were coming out of the gate and I didn't disrupt you there.
And maybe I'm jumping a little bit ahead, but as the Vancouver police were continually asked about these missing people, and they were never able to prove if they were missing and moved away. Many of them were drug addicts, and as we said, prostitutes. So it does seem like they are given a lower priority than a case in the regular world, how that would look. But what's interesting here, and we've seen throughout so many investigations into serial killers, is how the police catch them usually is them making a mistake, or the police being very vigilant in their police work, and you know, from a parking ticket to a busted taillight, you can see a serial killer and how they've been captured. The Vancouver police had similar opportunities, or I'm not sure if it's the Vancouver police, but this man Picton was arrested in 1997 after getting into an altercation with a woman trying to handcuff her. They got into a knife fight, and from what I'm reading, an orderly at the hospital found in Picton's pocket a key that fit the handcuffs that he tried to put on the woman's wrist, and he was arrested and charged with attempted murder. What happened to that initial case?
It went nowhere, and what's intriguing is the Vancouver police and the RCMP allegedly went out to the pig farm to watch the performances, where the women would presumably strip up on a stage in front of an audience of up to 1,800 to 2,000 people. The problem, I think, for the Vancouver police and the RCMP Royal Canadian Mounted Police is as they went into this converted barn, apparently they'd spent over $1 million on turning it into a high-grade nightclub, they went past cameras, and their faces would have been recorded in the audience watching what happened to the women up on the stage, and subsequently by a piece of software known as Demon Face Recognition Software, developed by a United Kingdom outsourcer called Serco. And if Americans think that they shouldn't have to worry about Serco, let me assure them they should, because Serco was given an outsource contract to run the United States National Visa Center. It now runs the United States Patent and Trademark Office. It runs the United States Defense Ammunition Center. It runs the Defense Red Switch Network for the National Command Authority. So you, with all due respect, in America, you've allowed a British outsourcer with a very unfortunate pedigree to infiltrate your government and in fact run very significant parts of the Department of Defense and the justice arm of the American government.
What? No. Wait a second. Whoa, hold the phone. Say that again? Well, no, I mean, you don't have to say that again. But wait a second. We outsourced
the National Visa Center in 1994 when Hillary Clinton was first lady and Christine Marcy Field's sister was the senior counsel for the detention and deportation program of the Immigration and Naturalization Service. So, America, I'm sorry to say, you've got a problem.
Yeah. Hey, somebody pick up the white courtesy phone, will you? Okay. I didn't know that. I'm my surprise is genuine. Oh my goodness.
May I tell you, if I may, what Serco's name was before its initial public offering in 1988, which was arranged, I believe, by Serco's investment banker.
Okay, I'm buckled
by
in.
By the name of Wilbur Ross.
Wilbur Ross.
Commerce Secretary. Yeah. Or Trump.
Yeah, he's
and 25 years with N.M. Rothschild & Sons.
Nice. Okay.
So, in 1998, the name of this organization stopped being RCAGB 1929, and RCAGB, as you can imagine, is Radio Corporation of America, Great Britain, 1929. Back in 1929, it's a wholly owned subsidiary of Radio Corporation of America, which would have described itself back then as a radio patent monopoly company.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, you converted the Radio Corporation of America's subsidiary in the United Kingdom into Serco, and Serco continued to provide the Allies with, for example, the 4-minute warning system of a nuclear attack.
Okay, that's a good thing to outsource. I mean, you know, what the heck?
I wish I could see myself on the camera because I'd like to see my own expression. But anyway, please go ahead.
Yeah, and by the way, folks, we're working on that. Thank you for helping us out and for supporting us. We're actually, now that's a whole other story, but we actually have to get another piece of equipment to actually feed. Our loopback system is down, so we apologize. And that's, you know, that's only a $10,000 piece of equipment, but that's not much. All right. Oh my goodness! I'm stunned. First of all, I'm repulsed at the information about the Picton case, but I'm stunned about what. Joe, you better jump in here and save me because I don't know.
Well, Wilbur Ross has been a known globalist for a long time, and many people, just to get to the political side of this, many people were very unhappy with Trump's selection.
Yeah.
Of him and many other, you know, former Goldman Sachs guys that made it into his administration, and it's interesting to get that piece of his past. I didn't know about the Rothschilds and Co. I don't know that too much about him, but
was were
it's
we
very
napping, Joe? Were we napping when this happened? I mean,
no.
Were we napping to hear this from, well,
it's the boiled frog syndrome, gentlemen, if I may say so.
Oh, yeah.
Because this has been, since 1929, British intelligence, some people might say that's an oxymoron, but I think we survived pretty well. But British intelligence is exceedingly effective at penetrating the administration of its enemies. And wow. We are deep inside. Now, when I say we, there are many honorable Brits, just like there are many honorable Americans. But there are people who are not so honorable. And let me just pick up on Wilbur Ross. You may or may not know that he's a member of a Greek life community called Kappa Beta Phi. And Kappa Beta Phi is the mirror image of Phi Beta Kappa, which is the most prestigious honor society in the United States,
right,
with 18 presidents that were member of it.
Right.
And both Kappa Beta Phi and Phi Beta Kappa were formed in 1776, which I think from America's point of view should be quite interesting.
Interesting in a number of different ways. Hold that thought, because we're up against the top of the hour. Network break, 3 minutes. You've got 3 minutes. I've got 3 minutes to compose myself after hearing this. More from on the other side with our very special guest, David Hawkins, abledanger.org. This man,
friends with Phil McConnell.
Yeah.
And, he's been a guest on our show a few times, and the audience,
I have to get some oxygen,
wants him to come back. And we're going to continue to get into, the Picton case.
Yeah.
With David Hawkins on the other side. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this Monday edition of the Hagmann Report.
Go to abledanger.org, by the way. Greenovative. Go to HagmannReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the GMAG Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right? You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super GMAG Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly. Yeah, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's small, smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com. Precious Timber Profits.